they say in the trade. Well, welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. This is show number, believe it or not, Houston, number
11.
11.
We calculate that's almost 9 days of the Blind Handyman.
My goodness gracious. Who would have thunk it?
Who'd want to listen to it? Well, that's my question.
We need to do the Blind Handyman Marathon.
Who'd care?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe next November, ACB Radio will do that. I'm sure they won't. But how are you, sir?
I'm all right, I guess you could say.
Well, you're not here.
Well, no, I'm out in the yard in the sunshine.
So you're not that all right, huh?
Well, no, I'm not all right to travel right now.
You're not all right enough to be at the show.
At the show, or I would be there.
Well, we'd certainly love to have you.
But I certainly appreciate you asking the question. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, we miss you. It just doesn't seem the same without Tom Houston here. But anyway, we're back from the trip, obviously.
Everything went well, I suppose. I had a good time.
Well, I guess we had a good time. It won't go by so fast. You plan for those things for weeks or years, and they just just fly by.
That's what I always think about each Houston gathering. We plan it for months and months, and it seems to go by just so fast.
It does. It just goes by almost instantly. But anyway, we all made it home in one piece, and
that's good.
All three of us, we ate our way across three or four states.
Yeah, I bet.
How much weight did you gain? Did you set that?
4 pounds.
4 pounds.
4 pounds. I won't say how much Luann gained because she probably wouldn't like that.
Well, I guess the weather up there is about the way it's been here the last couple of days.
Actually, it was warmer up there than it was here.
Is that right?
We looked at temperatures this morning, and it was cooler in Texas, cooler in Lufkin than it was in either Cleveland or Pittsburgh or Boston.
But you did say
the weather was pretty bad in Vermont, right?
The weather was nasty in Vermont the 3 days we were there. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday we were there. The weather in Vermont was rainy, cold, and just uninhabitable. I hated it.
Kind of like the weekend when Tim and Cheryl came down here.
That was brought up.
Remember that?
Welcome to sunny Texas.
That was brought up several times. We invited them to Texas, and we have two really nasty weekends a year, and they came on one of them.
Yep, they sure did.
I was thinking they were saying about the World Series that it could be snowing in both locations.
I think it could be.
Colorado and or Boston, yeah.
Exactly.
Or they start in Boston tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, yes.
You know, we were, this hotel we stayed at is, I recommend it, it's an old hotel, but it does have one attribute. It has a really nice restaurant that serves wonderful sushi right next door. It's called the Buckminster Hotel.
The Buckminster.
And it's right downtown Boston. And it was right across from Fenway Park, and we were there Wednesday night, the first game of that series.
Hey, all right.
Well, now I know that the Colorado Stadium is not covered. Is Boston? Is Fenway Park? No.
I don't believe
no,
Fenway
absolutely.
Park is.
I don't
yeah.
think it is.
Now, I do know back in June that the Colorado went in there and won 2 out of 3.
I know that, boy, I'll tell you what, Colorado won 21 out of 22 their last game.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Now, that's hot. But, of course, they've had a lot of time.
9 days, yeah. I think maybe they've got the pitching edge. I think Boston's got the bats.
Yeah, Boston and the bats and Colorado pitching. That's the way I look at it.
If they beat Boston, they're going to have it to do.
Yes, they will.
Because Boston's ready to. That'd be the same. They won the series 3 years ago, didn't they, Boston?
Don't get me to lie.
It hadn't been long ago. Well, you baseball fans are supposed to know these things.
Well, they've always been the hard luck team. They'd come close and not the Yankees would always take them out.
Yeah.
But,
I'm still crying over the Astros and White Sox.
Yeah, we didn't win. We just showed up, didn't we?
Exactly. 4 games over.
No point crying over that. That's all history. Anyway, We hope you could come and see us sometime.
Well, I mean, it would be nice. I would love to. I'm just not quite ready.
Not quite ready.
Not quite ready.
We'll give you another week. Yeah. Has Emily and the boy found an apartment yet?
Oh yeah.
That happened.
My granddaughter.
So that eased the pressure a little bit, didn't it?
Oh yeah, I've had some time alone. Martha had a little stroke, and she's in the hospital.
Really?
Uh huh.
Is that right? Did y'all get her to sign that check before she went?
My goodness sake.
Get those life insurance. That's what John Henry says when he goes out of town. He said, y'all all got a key to my house, and the life insurance policy's laying right in the middle of the kitchen table. If anything happens, you want to know these things, you know?
That's amazing.
All right, so we're going to go and read a little list mail.
Well, I appreciate you calling.
Wish you could join us, and hope maybe we'll see you next week. I'll talk to you in a day or two.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks,
bye,
Tommy.
Thomas. Later, we'll
Tommy.
See
y'all later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, Mr. Patterson, I guess it's
list mail time.
List mail. You don't have glasses. So.
The dogs. You know, the dog ate my homework. That's what the kids, I'm telling you. Honest to goodness.
How does this keep happening?
We have a little border collie, and I've got to be the most forgetful person in the world, and I always invariably will take my glasses off. If I go eat someplace, I'll take them off, lay on the table. And, of course, Emily, that's her job to say, don't forget your glasses. Well, I was outside, and we have a little wicker table there between our two little chairs that we sit on the patio with. And I laid one pair of glasses down here about a month ago, and we found them 3 or 4 days later chewed up. Anyway, and so now my last good pair, the same thing happened. So either I need to get a different place to sit or get a different dog.
Why don't you put them on a chain around your neck like all the other old folks do?
I may have to go to that. But anyway, we've got it covered here.
All
we
right.
can handle it.
You have it.
It says that my wife has decided that she no longer likes the color of the fiberglass shower stall in our master bedroom. I know that it's possible to change the color of enamel tubs and sinks, but is it possible to do something to change the color of fiberglass?
Well, you might paint it, but it's always going to be sticky because you're always going to be taking a shower and getting it wet. Don't do it.
Well, it's been my experience, and then we have an answer that we'll read that Dale wrote, but it's that the color in fiberglass is done as it's made in most cases. Now, you can, that's not always the case because there are parts anymore of cars that are, fiberglass, like Emily's little Honda convertible had several fiberglass panels, and we had one actually that we had damaged, and we took it to the body, and they painted it. So, yes, it can be painted, but, I mean, we're talking with a spray gun, it's somebody that knows what they're doing. I have no idea what it would look like brush painted. And then the answer that we had was written by our good friend Dale Levins, and he talks about that you would need to really clean it really good, clean all the residue, get you something, I don't know, Formula 409, Fantastic, Clorox cleanup, Top Job something. And then he says you might want to rough up the finish, but, I mean, to me that would defeat the prettiness of the, you would want, you know, if it's fiberglass, I don't know that I'd want to rough it up. And then what he does say is use the two component epoxy. It's where you have two things that you mix together.
Yeah.
It's really hard to paint it with epoxy and unless you could spray it. I just don't know with a brush what kind of finish you're going to get.
They're talking about a fiberglass shower that was set in there.
The install, the built-in, I guess it's the typical fiberglass
shower. Well, I just changed the whole thing.
Well, I that would involve a plumber and maybe expense. So maybe, we're sure trying to save money. But I think I might just,
sounds like a lot of trouble.
But the first thing I would do is call a paint store and tell them your dilemma and see what they recommend. Sharon Williams or whomever. And get them because, like I say, a lot of fiberglass, the paint's built in on that type of thing.
Well, the only person that ever sees it is her.
Well,
is her, you know.
That's probably pretty much true.
Well,
I think you're being a little bit presumptuous, Philip.
You think so? Well, you never know.
You never know about these things.
The only person that ever sees it's her, and she doesn't like the color. Tell her to get over it.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
All right. But Dale Levin says it can be done.
Yeah, he says to paint it with epoxy. I mean, that was his to clean it real good, and then he talked about roughing it up, and then probably the two-part epoxy. It says this needs to be done carefully. You don't want to get your hair stuck in it.
Yeah.
And this is a confined space, so yeah, I mean, the fumes from epoxy are just
and you're always going to be getting it wet.
Yeah,
so it's never going to dry.
Well, you'd sure have to let it sit for
take a shower at the neighbors for several days or something. That's wild that someone would even think of wanting to do that. Anyway.
Okay. And so now.
Now what?
Let's see. Here we have another one. And I couldn't figure out the point of this. And as it turned out, it turned out to be tons and tons of responses. But I wasn't sure what our good friend Dale Levins, this is the Dale Levins hour here, was talking about. But he says, just wondering if any of you on the list with bandsaws have successfully re-sawn planks. Well, I had to go read. I wasn't exactly sure what he meant. And so I had to go read Brothers. But what he's wanting to do are split boards, like not the width ways, but the thickness. In other words, he wants to take a one-inch board and split down to a half-inch. And the planks he was talking about were like 1 by 10 inches long, which is not long, but trying to split something. Anyway, there were several suggestions. Why don't you just buy half-inch boards to start with?
Good thinking.
But then actually he, in some further emails, talked about, well, maybe he wanted to cut them 1/4 inch. Instead of one board, he wants to make twice as many or maybe even 4 times as many. So I know that you had a bandsaw. That's what stuck my fancy. But I can't imagine trying to do...
Bandsaws are meant for small stock. I mean, they're not meant for using huge pieces of lumber with. They're not... I don't think they are they? Why don't you go to Lowe's? You can buy any thickness board you want there, 1/4 inch.
Or somebody said if you didn't, because of course that in his question he talks about wanting to make 2 for 1, but somebody said, well, you know, if you didn't want the board, you could plane it down. I mean, if you didn't want the leftovers, but to just rip boards, I'm like you, man, with all of even the synthetic lumbers they make, I don't know what he's making. So, I mean, he has the right to want to split them if he wants to, but I couldn't tell him how to do it.
I've never done it.
It would be more of a table saw function than anything I could think of, but, boy, your hands would come in close proximity.
And that big old table saw thick blade would be almost as thick as the board you're trying to split.
I think in one email he commented on it, the thickness of the blade. So he was just wondering, said not that he was going to buy a bandsaw, he was wondering if anybody had tried it. So.
Well,
the
bandsaw's got a little fence there. I guess theoretically a guy could, I was trying to think if the band is off my band. It seemed like it was off and we put it back on and it works again, or so I can't remember. But I've never done that. Dale, you might try. Of course, in Cochrane, Ontario, I'm sure there isn't a Home Depot. He lives a long way from...
You would think not.
A long way from lots of places.
Lowe's and Home Depot.
And have you ever tried to buy lumber mail order?
Yeah, it'd be pretty hard to do.
I have heard, believe it or not, actually, though, that there is a mail order, if you can believe this, lumber dealer now.
I was actually real ate up with the fiberglass or the rubberized, the rail fencing. I can't even think of what it's made. PVC.
Yeah.
And there is a company that'll ship me a truckload of it at a pretty darn good price. I mean,
I think you can get lumber shipped these days.
Seems
if you're
like
willing to
I
pay
heard
the freight.
Some car talk advertising some lumber place that will ship ship things to you. But well, if you got it and didn't like it, you know, there you are.
Well, yeah, that could be a problem. If they sent those really crooked 2x4s, you would have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Moving right along. All right, I want to preface this next email by saying that I'm not really thin-skinned. But I'm going to take exception to this email, and in this particular one I'm reading, he doesn't mention my name, but in a previous one, this fellow mentions my name, and so I don't know if he posted it twice. But anyway, I'm going to read it. It's a little long, but then we'll discuss it. It says, I heard on your show that some people are using screwdrivers and pliers for light bulbs to remove the broken light bulb sockets.
Yeah.
It says, my father and I just got through speaking about this, and he informed me that there is a tool, of course he didn't tell us, called a light bulb socket remover that you could buy. Anyway, you could pick it up at any hardware store, he says. Anyway, but he says that really the way to do this is to use a wooden broom handle and insert it in the socket, and then with some pressure you can turn it, of course, the same way that the socket would unscrew and get it out. And then in big bold print he says, but by all means, never insert a screwdriver or a pair of pliers to the light socket. And he goes on to tell you, because you could get electrocuted and all that. And then in his next little comment, he answers his own question. It says about winding up, be careful when you're rolling up an outside extension cord around your arm when you're rolling up. It says always make sure to unplug it. Well, duh, if you're going to work on a light socket, how about always making sure that the light switch is turned off and the breaker is turned off?
It only really makes sense to me.
Yeah, you and need then, to make sure the power was off.
And then try connecting two wires together using your broomstick. You know, I mean, if you're going to work on a light fixture, use some common sense. I don't recommend going around with pliers.
Wait, I want to hear where he mentioned your name.
Well, no, this was another email. I think he posted the same thing. And I'm not being hostile toward him. He just, I think he said that Don Patterson said, and then he posted it again. So I just wanted to make clear, sure, well, I use pliers and screwdrivers all the time. And let me tell you what, I've gotten knocked off a chair before. But you have to, you know, live and learn. I mean, if you want to, you know, breakers, that's what they make breakers and switches for. And if I'm in a certain house and I'm not sure of the wiring, whether it's series or parallel, I'll turn the main breaker off. Where there's absolutely no, I mean, because,
that's a sure way to do it.
You know, just talking about electrocutions, there was a guy using his drill and he was sweating, and a drop of sweat dropped down into the motor and killed him. I mean, so, you know, don't use electric drills anymore.
I know a guy who was drilling a drill through a 220 one time.
Are we looking at him?
No, it wasn't me. Terry Clayton White drilled into the 220. What he was doing by his mother's dryer, but this guy had come down the wall and then run across a little bit to put the plug, and Terry was drilling kind of right beside the plug and got into the 220.
But anyway, I mean, the advice from this guy is well taken. You know, if you can come up with something else, just the main thing is you got to use your tools to turn off the source of the electricity and you won't get shocked.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to have one of these tools. It's like that tool that Don Shaw has for unsticking your garbage disposal.
I happen to have one, too.
Is that you?
Yeah, it was Don Patterson's got that.
But it's such a simple
tool. Yeah, it is. It's such a simple little
gizmo. Well, I'll tell you what, I will find out and mention it next show, because I bet our friends at Abney and Son, if there is such an animal, they know about it.
Have the light bulb socket remover,
right?
You think?
Yeah. So we'll see.
Right.
I just haven't broken too many light bulb sockets.
I haven't either.
You know, so it's...
I've had one, maybe. Ever. Wow.
You got another one to take up a little time?
Well, I could actually talk about another thing that's been appearing on the list a bunch. I mean, there was a whole... And this was about fluorescent lighting, the hazards of the compact fluorescent bulbs.
Yeah.
About the mercury. And then they go... Somebody wrote an article about... Or read an article about where the new up-and-coming thing might be LEDs. And then, of course, our friend Max Robinson, in his genius, of course, did say, well, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, the danger about the fluorescent lights is the mercury. disposing of the used, the spent bulbs. And Max Robinson says, well, in LEDs is arsenic. So what are we going to do about that?
What certain amount.
And then people countered back and forth that the amounts of arsenic and the amounts of mercury were insignificant. But, you know, we're going to do times anymore. Like, I'm changing all to fluorescents. And it's not really to save money, because actually my electric bill hadn't budged one. But actually what you're trying to do is save energy. It's just plain and, so we're going to have to suffer some of the consequences. I mean, to get something on one hand, you might have to pollute a little bit on the other.
We stayed in six or eight different hotel rooms, and every one of them had a lamp with one of those curly Q fluorescent light bulbs in it. They're the thing. I'm fixing to buy four of them and put them in the bedroom.
They're neat bulbs.
They light up quicker.
Yep.
And all of the hotels on our recent Colorado trip were all fluorescent.
That little curly cue things. And I guess nobody complained. The girls seemed to be downloading those pictures. You got to get those pictures back to Texas. Yep. They couldn't wait till we get back.
And also, one thing about the I have a lantern that is all LEDs. It's like a little Coleman lantern that you'd carry around, a small version of one, except you just turn a switch and you can either have it burning 15 LEDs or 9.
Yeah.
And it makes a good light by the campfire, but I would hate to try to read by it. I mean, I know LEDs can be bright. You gave me a little light for the barbecue pit. I use it as a desk light. I mounted it on my desk. If I want to read something out of one of my books, it makes a little spotlight, and it's a good light. So, anyway, we're saving energy, not money.
We're trying to save money.
Save money, but my bill's gone up.
I want to mention that we are home from our trip, and my wife took 1,200 and something pictures, like 1,260 pictures on this trip.
Amazing.
That unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
With a digital camera, you can just do that.
Oh, yeah.
1,260 pictures. I guess if you folks will hang around this evening, you could put them in the panorama and see every damn maple tree in the state of Vermont, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It stopped about every 15 feet. Ask Cummins. We ought to call Cheryl after about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of, today is Cheryl Cummings' birthday.
All right, another year.
It is Cheryl Cummings'
birthday
today.
To
good
you.
Shot.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Cheryl Cummings.
On the 23rd.
That's
How
right.
How many years
birthday.
Is she?
She's, I'm not going to tell gonna you.
Not going to say, happy birthday to you.
It's Cheryl Cummings' birthday, and this won't be played on her birthday, but maybe she'll hear about it. Somebody, Tim will tell her. Back in a minute with our guest. Guest today is
Larry Stansifer.
Stansifer
is going to talk with us about car auto maintenance, getting your auto ready for the winter season.
He used to work for Subaru or somebody. We've had him on
Porsche.
Porsche, did he?
Porsche.
Interesting fellow. We'll do him in just a minute. Don Patterson and Don Shaw are with me, and I'm Phil Parr, and this is show number 211. And we're at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
I am here.
break music.
It really is.
I knew that is. I like it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're back at the Blind Handyman Show, and it's good to have you with us on our show number 211.
211.
Let's see. We've had this fella on before. His name is Larry Stancifer. How are you, sir?
Good. How about yourself?
We're doing well. And you worked at, didn't we say Porsche?
That's correct. Yeah, Porsche. Yeah. I got 20-some-odd years with him as a service technician.
Man.
As a service technician until that old eyesight began to fade?
I never had any sight to fade.
Oh, you never had any sight to fade?
Nope.
Oh, you worked for them as a totally blind person?
Precisely.
I remember you. I do. Yeah. I had forgotten about that. That's a pretty amazing story that they would even consider letting you work as a blind person.
It would be a good blind like me story.
As a service technician. I probably need to have you as a guest on Blind Like Me. I haven't done that yet, but we certainly need to. Where are you? Where's your home, sir?
I live in southern Utah. I'm about 125 miles north of Las Vegas, Nevada.
All right.
Well,
out here in the southwest desert.
Let me say that Las Vegas, Nevada is a great place to be away from.
Well, I don't know. You know, Las Vegas is a little bit like Texas. Everything you've ever heard about it is true.
Yeah. Everything you've ever heard about it is true. I like that.
How far are you from Moab?
We're about a 3-day horse ride.
Okay.
About 280 miles, I reckon.
Okay. We were in Colorado here this summer. My wife is a 4-wheel off-road. She has a Discovery, a Land Rover Discovery.
Oh, yeah,
and
right,
we went to Colorado, and I think their next big outing is in Moab. They say
it is. That's
different than climbing dirt, climbing all those smooth rocks.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you sound like you might have been to some of those. Is that?
Oh, yes. Yes. Uh-huh. In fact, I built several motors for those guys back in the Dark Ages.
Back in the Dark Ages. What kind of motors do they use?
This particular gentleman, I built him a 470-inch Chrysler Hemi that he had put in a what they call a ram charger. It's kind of Dodge's answer to a Blazer or Bronco.
Yeah.
And we built him a 470-inch fuel-injected Hemi for that.
Wow.
That's what Emily has, isn't it, Don?
Now, Emily has a Discovery. It's a 2000. I think they're owned by Ford and Jaguar. I think hers has a Jaguar engine.
It probably does.
I'm not sure.
You'll know when you take it to the shop, trust me.
It's a V8, and whether we wanted to or not, we got 13 miles a gallon going on our trip. 13, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the fuel was excessive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
Well, I'm sure we've told this story before. Maybe probably ask some people who haven't heard it. How did you get these people to even talk to you about becoming a technician for them?
Back in those days, we didn't have such a thing as ADA and all this crazy, you know, shoot yourself in the foot kind of stuff.
That's true.
In those days, the attitude was pretty much, I don't think you can do it, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you 2 weeks just like I will the next man. You know, you get 1 week to learn where everything is, and the next week to show us that you know what you do what you say you can do.
Yep.
But I also, I think the last time we talked to, were your family not Porsche?
No. Actually, my dad had a series of BMW dealerships.
I see. Okay.
And so, you know, at that point, yeah, I did have some warm doorknobs, as they say in the sales profession.
Right.
You know,
okay.
I knew some people.
Yeah.
And then, I developed a reputation, went through the union apprenticeship program, went through the factory's master's program, journeyman and master's program, and as Paul Harvey says, as they say, the rest of it's history.
we'll give you 2 weeks to figure out where everything is, and then you're on your own. And sure enough, in that 2 weeks, I bet you figured out where, I mean, everything was.
Oh, hey. I never found a corner selling pencils that paid anywhere near like that did. So you're right, I had to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Those corners are few and hard to find in small towns. There were probably some jobs that you could do without eyesight that were easier maybe for you than a guy who had to look at them and do them.
Yeah. If finding rattles.
That would be one.
Yeah.
That would be one.
I started out in the heavy duty room. I started out doing engines and transmissions, and in the what they call the unit room. And then later on, I went out and I worked the line just like everybody else. And then got into tune up and fuel injection. And air conditioning is great. I love air conditioning. If I could do nothing but AC, I'd probably still be in it.
Now, why is that?
It's fast. It's clean. The gauges, the equipment, the leak detectors and stuff. They have an audible version of a leak detector.
That's neat.
Easily calibrated. The gauges are easily made tactile.
Uh huh.
So you know.
How did you make those gauges talk to you?
The gauges didn't talk. I read them tactily. I read them tactily.
You took the face off.
Right, exactly.
And just felt where they were.
Yeah, I used a little bit of epoxy and made some dots. And then I had a friend of mine who was a tool and die maker that did all the stuff I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
He actually built me a dial indicator that he extended the scale. He used the hands off of an old alarm clock.
Really?
Extended the circumference of the face and extended the needle on the dial indicator and worked it out that way.
Oh, that's neat.
That's pretty amazing.
It is.
It's like a great man once said, necessity is the mother of invention.
And was this in a what size town was this dealership in?
There was several. There was one little place you may have heard of that's currently on fire, Los Angeles, California. I worked all up and down the West Coast, San Francisco, San Jose, down Southern California. As a service, I'll tell you what, as an automotive service professional, you can go pretty much any place in the world and find a living.
I bet you can.
If you know what you're doing, yes.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
And you did.
Yep.
And so you moved several times.
Got tired
of one place and moved to another place?
Yeah.
Did you raise a family doing this or not?
Negative. No.
No.
I've had several ex-wives and
yeah.
Oh yeah.
This is probably a story better spent for your what's that thing y'all do on Friday night where you all call in and lie to one another? What is that?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. You need to join us
to get together on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we've got several ex-wives also, some of us do.
We have a friend in Alabama that's always on. What's Kevin?
Yeah.
Our friend Kevin DeSay, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Been around the block a time or two.
Oh, yeah.
I think he may have more ex-wives than all of us. I don't know what
probably
he
does.
he does. All right. We wanted to talk a little bit today about a person. You don't think you would talk on a handyman for show for blind people about cars, but we want to. Most of us have a car. All three of us have. Well, let's see. Don's got a car. Don Pat's got two cars, and I've got three. I think cars now. So we do have those cars. Do have to be winterized, and we want to talk a little bit about that today.
Well, you know, the term winterized isn't as significant as it once was because there was a time when we'd run straight water through the spring and summer, and then in the wintertime we'd put what they call antifreeze in.
I remember those days.
Okay. Now it's all season coolant because the motor has a whole bunch of different alloys in it.
Yeah.
You don't want those alloys getting green and growing together and creating electrolysis and one thing or another. You have to keep them in a neutralized medium.
So that's why you
all-weather coolant.
That's why you keep the cooling in all year.
Right. Exactly right.
You wouldn't even want to add any water to the radiator now at all, would you?
No, you'd add a premix. You have 50-50 premix. Then the same thing is pretty much true of motor oil. You know, you'd run one weight in the summer, another weight in the winter. Now with the advent of the synthetic oils, you run the same thing year-round. Sure, there's some places you might, if you're doing severe service, you might run snow tires in the wintertime. But, again, with the advent of traction control, all-wheel drive and all-season radials, not too much of it. You know, there's not a lot of winter-specific work that really needs to be done.
Well, and batteries are better nowadays than they ever were.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Gel cell technology, batteries throw it out when it goes bad, you know, kind of a situation.
Yeah.
The only thing I found by experience, it seems like when a battery does go down the tube now, though, it happens like in an instant. I mean,
well,
you can...
the battery's doing so much more work now.
Yeah.
The old battery had to do, once the engine was running, the battery just kind of hang out there under the front corner, under the hood, and not do much.
Yeah.
But now it's responsible for keeping a whole myriad of electronics activated and empowered.
But when it goes away, I mean, you can be driving 1 minute, stop for 5 minutes, come back to start the vehicle, and nothing, nada.
Exactly right.
I've had that happen twice on a caravan, different caravans, and it just, when they go, they go. Yep. But, yeah, definitely improvements.
The one thing that I would recommend is that before it gets too cold and too nasty, to give it a real thorough wash and wax job to protect it from the snow, you know, the ice and the salt and whatever it is your particular municipality happens from the streets.
Right.
I would recommend that you take a good look underneath, make sure that all the dust seals on the ball joints and the CV joints at the ends of the axles, if it's equipped with, you know, with CV joints, that those are all in good shape, because the last thing you want to do is get mud and salt up inside of those.
Yeah, make sure there's no cracks in the rubber.
Exactly right.
Boot.
Make sure the windshield wiper blades are good. Periodically during the winter, and I know this is hard to fathom in 30 below weather, but if you've got an older car that doesn't have the climate control in it, every week or so, flip that air conditioning on for 30 seconds or a minute to keep the lubricants and the freon circulating so the seals and the compressor don't dry out.
I've heard that, and I didn't know if there was anything to that or not, but I'd always heard that you should do that.
Yep, there is and there isn't. Okay, if you've got a car that's equipped with temperature control, it runs on a bypass, uses the compressor, runs anyway in a bypass mode. So that if the temperature gets over 80 degrees, the compressor will kick on for 30 or 45 seconds until it gets back to the thermostat setting, and then it'll kick off again. Now, if your car isn't equipped with that kind of a system, then, yeah, you know, you want to flip it on.
Good advice. Need to start doing that.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. The other thing you want to do, too, is obviously it's all a matter of good maintenance. You know, make sure your tires are good and are properly inflated. Make sure the drive belts are in good shape. The serpentine belt that's equipped, or the V-belts, however it happens to be equipped. Change the filters. Who wants to be out there in the mud and blood and the snow having to crawl up underneath that thing? And
that's no lie.
And change the fuel filter because it happened to ice up because you spaced it when the weather was nice.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I've never been much on working on cars, but my last attempt at working on cars was an old Buick I had that I let freeze, and the freeze plugs popped out. And I thought, well, I'll crawl under here. Of course, I didn't have anything to lift it up with, so I just slipped up under the car.
Hell of a thing.
And put freeze plugs in it, and of course, it had popped a hole somewhere else in the head,
or in
the block. And so that did absolutely no good. But that was my last attempt. From then on, I bought new cars and traded them in.
Yeah.
So, Larry, what kind of temperature range do y'all encounter in your part of Utah?
Well, where I am, we think 70 degrees is winter.
Okay, never, really? Even in the winter, y'all don't get severe snow?
No. We might get a week where it'll drop down, you know, 35, 40 degrees above zero. But, you know, and what I think here 2 years ago, we got 186,000 flakes of snow.
Well, what sort of summertime temperatures you have?
We can get up 110.
So really, so you got Texas type weather.
Yeah,
but I have been in Vegas, boy, in February when it was cold and the wind blowing 70 miles an hour.
It can do that, but it doesn't do it for very long.
For very long.
Or two.
Okay.
That's why I live here. I held my snow shovel up in the air, and some guy said, "What's that?" And this is where I stayed.
A man after my own heart.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been to Utah. I've been to Vegas.
Yeah.
A number of times. That made my donation to the city.
Yeah.
And came home, but I don't think I've ever been in the great state of Utah. Luann and I were discussing last night the states we haven't been in, and I guess Utah would be... Are you of the Mormon persuasion?
Negative.
Negative.
No. They don't drink beer, so I don't join.
There you go.
That'd do it.
Yeah,
right,
that's what happened with me and those Baptists.
They didn't drink beer, so he didn't join.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, what age fellow are you, Larry?
I am 60 and change.
60 and change. So we all about the same. About the same lineage.
I remember falling in love with Sky King's niece, Penny, you know, back in those days.
Yeah.
And the shadow nose.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
Flat top, dirty bop, cop in the field, grubbing on the living room floor. What? Why did you retire? You just get tired of messing with it?
Not the young man's profession. I mean, I still mess with it. I still do a little bit of hot rod, and if it produces 700 horses and pisses the neighbors off, I can't help but fooling with it, you know.
Yeah, y'all did a race here a while back, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that on the list. Right.
But as far as, I haven't pulled a wrench in anger since about 1990, I don't think, or 92.
You say you did a race. What are you talking about?
My girlfriend's a drag racer.
Yeah.
Really?
And so we went down to Phoenix, and we had an outlaw event down there, and she got a little 56 Corvette with a 572-inch big block in it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's fun. You know?
Man. But
did you just got the car ready for her to drive?
Well, yeah. I basically built it and maintain it for her, yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't know if you heard the show or not, but we've got a friend named Lee Stone who actually...
I read his thing.
Did you see that thing? Isn't that the craziest...
Gentlemen, is there some way I can put you on pause? My cell phone's going crazy.
Listen, we'll go and let you go. And we thank you. And I'm going to wait a month or so, and I want to do you on our Blind Like Me show, Larry. Thank you very much, and we'll talk with you.
Thank you.
Have a good one, Larry.
Later, Larry.
Larry Stansifer. Sounds like he's done all right. That's certainly, like Dan Rossi was saying the other day, every time you say, well, hell, a blind person couldn't possibly do that, then you find one who is.
That's right.
And he's a perfect example of that. I mean, who'd have thought this guy made his living as a service technician in a dealership, in several dealerships.
All those years.
That's just like his sighted brethren.
Yep.
Working on cars. That's pretty...
But, you know, believe it or not, Phil, back even when we were just getting out of TSB, I left at 14. I forget, I don't know when exactly you left. But, you know, there was even back then, there were people talking about doing automatic transmission repair. And that got to be a little lucrative thing for a while. I think it got now to where it's so technical, you couldn't do it, but... So I guess it wasn't an unheard of thing, but yeah, I admire this guy, Larry.
I do too, and I want to do his life story. But
yeah, he'll have a good story. I think
our buddy Lamar Alexander up in Dutchess was a trained.
Yeah, Lamar did automatic transmissions. In fact, I guess there's no point now that it can't be done anymore. I was going to say you could talk about that at some point, but it's just that's a profession that's gone down the tube. So.
Well, you know, it would be a nice thing to be able to do. Way out here at the Kawasaki motorcycle guy we deal with from time to time, we went in there one day and we wanted to have something serviced, our jet ski or something, and he said, well, man, I've had two mechanics have left, and I said, well, what do you pay? Because I told him, I said, I got a tool chest. I'll be here in the morning. No expense, but it'll be, they start out, I think, at 18 or 19 bucks an hour. I mean, if you know what you're doing, you know.
There's no reason.
And I'm certain a Porsche mechanic makes a lot more than that.
I bet you.
I would imagine so. Let's just take a short break and come back. And I don't know what y'all want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about the inside of a commode tank. Just a minute. I had it's not a real interesting experience, but just kind of a strange thing. Hang on just a second. We'll be right back. Don Patterson, Don Shaw, I'm Phil Parn. We're the Blind Handyman for today. The Blind Handyman Show 211.
Yeah.
Still absolutely amazing me. I think I mentioned that I didn't turn the speaker down. Today, that my wife was doing a custody thing for a plumber. And so I have plumbing owed me because he couldn't pay. And so she agreed.
Right.
I told you, from now on, we've got her asking. The first thing you ask is, "Well, God, what do you do for a living?"
Yeah,
I'm a Porsche mechanic.
And he's a Porsche mechanic. We don't, if he's a Nissan mechanic, we got him because we got two Nissan cars.
That's right.
Anyway, we're plumber, and so I had the flush valve, flapper valve, you call it, the flush cock or whatever it's called, that drops down in the hole that stops the way your inside of your commode works is when you flush the commode, it pulls this thing up. And this thing floats back. The water drains out and cleans out your bowl underneath that you've used. And then it drops, floats its way back down, seals off the tank, and your tank fills. The ball rises. The ball floats on top of the water, and the water pushes the ball up. Well,
shuts off the water.
And shuts off the water. I mean, that's the way the inside. It's very simple. Operation.
Except for those that don't have balls.
Except
anymore.
For those. Well, this one has a ball, but it's a weird looking deal. Anyway, my thing needed replacing, and I didn't want to fool with it, so I called them and they came out and replaced it. Except that the other morning I went in and flushed the commode and the flusher came off in my hand.
Really?
The what?
The handle came off in my hand. What kind of deal is this? Well, it never had quite flushed right, so I looked around in there and put it back on and mashed it back on, and I couldn't find a set screw. I guess it just sticks on there, and they hadn't put it on well enough. But still, it was you'd flush it, and you'd hear the metal rod hit the top of the tank. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and this one only had one hole. So I found out that the new way you do it is you adjust the chain, drops down into a little wire thing, and you just move it up links on the chain rather than change the hole.
Okay.
So I moved it up three or four links, popped it down in the wire thing, tightened, put the flusher thing back on, and bingo, it works.
Well, the little wire thing you're talking about, is it like a clip?
It's like a little clip.
Okay.
And the chain links, between the links, fits down in this clip.
Okay,
because
remember we had this question about two shows ago.
We did. And used to, there was the
holes.
Used to, there were holes that you could move the chain up on the long wire thing that attached, attached to the handle on the front. Well, that's not obviously not true anymore.
But, you know, isn't it? See, aren't you glad that this plumber owed you? Though wouldn't you have had to pay his damn service call? This happened to me out on the pavilion with my shower. You know, I told you the guy came out there. He had to come back five times, this one plumber. When he first left, he didn't do something right, and I called him back. Then when he left the second time, he left his tools. So he came back. I saw him out there, and he said, "Well, I'm getting my tools." Then he left, and he came back. He forgot his glue. And I said, you know, if this would have been some 68- or 70-year-old woman dealing with this SOB, she'd have paid all this money and not got anything done.
Well, I didn't even call him. I don't, you know, but I'm amazed, absolutely amazed, that this guy left that like that.
Yeah.
Of course, we're He doesn't know what the deal is. He works for the guy who's getting the chalk, who's doing the... He doesn't know that we're not paying for it. He left us a bill.
Yeah.
Now, I know we don't have to pay that
right.
bill. Right. But he didn't know that.
Well, see,
right.
the last job I had when they set the commode out in the pavilion, Loggins Plumbing, and I like Ken and Ralph.
Yeah.
But they usually send some... Anyway, so they sent the guy, and he came out there. Well, first he started talking to me. Well, you should have used... 4-inch pipe. And I said, why? I had a plumber friend out here, and he's the one who helped me hook it up. He's used 3-inch pipe. I said, that flange you're going to will either go in 4-inch pipe or over 3-inch pipe. Well, yeah, it does, but you should have used 4-inch pipe. I mean, he was telling me what I did wrong. So when he did the commode, then he left. And I was out there looking, and it wasn't caulked under the commode. Like, in other words, all floors are not level. Completely level, and like sitting down on the tile to dress it up, make it look pretty, and keep water from running out, you caulk it. So I called Ralph.
Actually, to keep water from running under it.
Yeah, I mean, well, when you flush it,
yeah.
to keep it, you know, and so I called, and Ralph happened to answer the phone, and I said, is it customary on a new installation? I said, we're talking new commode that you caulk? Sure is. I said, well, your guy didn't do it. So he had to come back to do that. That started it. And then it's when he left his tools. Then he left this, and then he left that. And I'm thinking, every time
amazing.
I've dealt with it. So what I do now is just ask for Ken. I just demand that he come. You know. But anyway, that's my, yeah.
Well, I think they are, those guys don't work directly for Loggins. They're independent contractors, and he answers the phone and sends them on jobs, and he gets a percentage of what they do.
Uh-huh.
I just wouldn't use that guy anymore, you know?
Well, you know, Ken came out, though, and saved the day. I got his number, and I specifically asked for him. And I said, man, I need you, because I just don't want you to say. I said, don't send that guy back out here. And he's the one that put the little grabber, you know, when we had the short pipe, and we was talking about a threadless connector.
Yeah.
And boy, well, he's the one that brought that fitting, and he got me fixed up where I was leaking. I had a major disaster fixing to happen, and he solved that. And so that's what I mean, and treated me right about the price. I mean, they, you know, but they just, it's a matter of paying attention to what you look like. You said that guy, say he's on a time deal, and they get in a big hurry, and boom.
Well,
you know,
there were two of them.
Yeah.
There were two of them, and they came, and they looked, and they said, we need to go get a part.
Always, that's the old story.
You know, a commode is a pretty simple thing. You ought to keep some parts to fix one of them. I mean, everybody's got one, and, you know, one out of the three calls you're going to get is going to be for them. Why wouldn't you have the part?
That's right.
So he went and got whatever part he needed. I have no idea what he charged her. Don't care, because it's a trade-out deal. But it didn't work, and I ended up having to fix it. Well, everybody wouldn't know how to do that. You know, everybody wouldn't know what I, you know, that just, it just infuriated me. It works fine now. Lou Ann said, well, we'll just have to, because what you had to do before was push it down and hold it
yep.
until it flushed.
Yeah, because it
you know,
was hitting that
Because it
top.
Was hitting the top yeah. of the, you know, why would he leave it like that? I don't understand.
Yeah, that seems strange, all right.
Workmanship.
They would do that.
Well, I
checking the clock there.
I had this this guy another time with Loggins over there on Allendale before I sold that house, and the guy came. He had his cell phone in one hand and his wrench in the other. I went in there, he's working on his commode, talking on the phone.
Yeah.
And then he told me the same, well, I got to go get a part. And I told him, I said, I'm not paying you to run all over town. You should have brought it with you. I said, you're on your own time. Well, I'm not going to fix this. And I said, that's fine. Don't fix it. You know, and so then I called Ken. Ken came out and fixed it for nothing.
And had the part.
And had the part, yeah.
Had the part with
and I think fired the pump.
It's time. I just started the scene. Let's see if we can get the bell ringing here. Anyway.
Next week,
what?
If we remember, let's talk about blind welding. That has appeared on the list.
That comes up from time to time on the list.
We've had a couple guys who can.
That's an ongoing topic.
Yeah.
We've had a couple guys who can do it. One of the guys, the best at brazing, not welding, but doing the little brazing where you braze copper together, is Dale Levins.
Well, I can braze, and I can see some, but I never could weld. So anyway, we'll just talk about it, try to get a little more info.
Blind welding. Maybe you can find a guest who can do it, Shaw.
Yeah, we've talked to somebody before, a couple of people about that. Yeah, it's time to do that again.
We're blind.
Well, I just saw it appear on the list, and the guy had a little project he was wanting to do, and I had a little advice for him, but we'll do it next week.
All righty. That'll be show 212, won't it?
Yeah, we'll getting us into sure 8 days and 22 or 3 hours of...
Assuming we all make it. We'd like to see Houston back.
Let's send him a cab.
Send him a cab. We'll give him a couple more weeks. If he doesn't come back, we'll just go to his house and do a show.
That's what I do.
A show live from Burke, Texas.
Take the stuff and take the Plexol and go out there.
Of course, by then he will have all of Martha's money, and he may be in sunny Florida.
Yeah, you never know.
Martha left the checkbook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another show.
That was mercenary.
That was mercenary, but she's got it and they don't, and I don't.
Yep.
Anyway, Don Shaw, thank you for appearing today on our show.
Yep.
Mr. Patterson, we appreciate you reading email and helping us out again.
I'll get some glasses here in a month or two.
Get some glasses next week. And I'm Phil Parr, and we're glad you came to see us today. And we'll do it again next week. I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw. Bye-bye.